Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to this Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. It's actually Sunday evening over there. Welcome to the show. We're coming to you through the facilities of People's Internet Radio, which is a viewer-supported radio station. So if you like what we're doing here, please reach into your pockets and throw a few bucks into the kitty for them. They sure appreciate that. You know, I've been talking with my guests before coming on the air here today, and there's subjects that I really like to cover, and I happened to run into a lady. Before I say that, I'm joined by Ali Tagba, who is the editor at Postmillennial, and Carrie Simpson, who founded an organization called Culture Garden Canada. And, you know, through my travels to the internet, I'm always looking at people that are speaking out against what we see going on in our schools and our government, and I ran across this lady named Carrie Simpson, and she is the, if I get this correct, the executive director at Culture Guard Canada. I hope I got that right, Carrie. But anyways, to say that this lady is a firecracker would be an understatement. And I knew right away as soon as I heard her talk that I had to get her on the air here and have her share some of your thoughts or her thoughts with my listeners today. I think this is very, very critical that people actually get a real gist for what is going on in our schools. She recently did a little talk in Chilliwack. I don't know how long ago that was, Carrie. I'm going to let you talk here in a second. But after listening to that video, I'm glad to have her on here today. Carrie, welcome to the show, and Ali, welcome to the show today. And Carrie, I'm going to let you. I'm going to let you get right into it. Okay, tell people a little bit about what's going on.
Oh, Barry, thanks. Number one, for spreading the message, because one of the big challenges we as British Columbians have had that have been trying to sound the alarm about what is transpiring in classrooms of British Columbia is that the government is basically lying to people about what is happening, what their kids are being taught, what the motive is behind what they're being taught. And of course, we're talking about the SOGI agenda, which is sexual orientation, gender identity. The government, unbeknownst to people, entered into a memorandum of agreement with a foundation called the ART Foundation. It has three trustees. We don't know anything about these trustees, unlike government that have to disclose where all their investments are, when the Ministry of Education under the BC Liberals, Mike Bernier, did that. And I should be very clear right now that the majority of MLAs had no idea that the Minister of Education was entering into this agreement, nor did our elected school board trustees. It's been an eye-opening and what the heck is going on kind of moment across the province. And then, of course, it's been propagandized, because what they're trying to march this in under, Trojan horse of inclusivity, and it's an anti-bullying program, and all the other nonsense that are just myths associated with this SOGI agenda. In a nutshell, just so that your listeners know right off the bat, what they are trying to do is alter our culture, eradicating a heteronormative society. And they are trying to do that by recruiting children for this cultural change. So starting in children's classrooms now in British Columbia, if you have a SOGI lead in your district, and they were actually getting quite a good foothold until people started waking up and going, oh, not in my kid's classroom. So now we're actually seeing pushback, which is a really good thing. But the SOGI agenda basically is to eradicate the lines between male and female, eradicate the lines between what is right, what is wrong. It's all about how you feel, not about reality. It's about playing name games and justifying and going along people's delusions. The world is truly turned upside down with this one, Barry.
It's, you know what, Carrie, I'm 63 years old now, and what I've seen unfold here, just, you know, in the last, I'd say 10 years, has just absolutely floored me. Everything that was once evil in our society now is being portrayed as being good, and what was good is now evil. But getting back to this school program, we see these same programs being brought in British Columbia and Alberta. The Bill C-89 in Ontario, I went through that bill extensively, and it's just absolutely appalling. The same thing's happening with Kathleen Wynne's sex education program in Ontario. It's just appalling what they're trying to do to our children. the gender breakdown, the gender confusion, children being taught stuff at a point in their life where it's totally irrelevant to what they're actually going to be dealing with in the future. Kids don't want to hear about this. They want to learn about bees and animals and geography and what's happening on the other side of the world. But this agenda is being shoved down our throat, and we see it everywhere. And
well, Barry, we need
a lot of people. Well, go ahead.
Can I interrupt you right there? Because you're right for the older kids that are now making up their minds about why is the school wasting my time. But this program is targeting kids right down as young as 5 years old and 4 years old, because we have pre-kindergarten now. And right off the bat, they say that there's no mom or dad. They say you don't have to be a boy if you're a boy, and you don't have to be a girl if you're a girl.
It's ludicrous. They're attacking children. They're indoctrinated children at the most impressionable time of their lives. You know, when I grew up in school, in grade 1, 2, 3, I mean, we literally worshipped our teacher. Like, that was, you know, this guy knows what he's talking about, and he's here to do us good. But now, you know, we see this absolute turn upside down in our society. And you're right. They're attacking children at the most susceptible time, and when they're the easiest to influence in their lives. So it's a pretty obvious agenda. Go ahead.
A little bit. One of the things I just noticed you guys talking about is the indoctrination at such a young age. And the thing that I thinking about what they're trying to solve, it's like they're probably looking at a specific group of kids whose parents are not actually educating them about their bodies and about the things that they should know. And it seems like trying to solve that problem, they're severing the relationship between the parents and the children, because now the state is taking the entire role of like educator in an area that normally parents would have been the main trendsetter. So they're kind of trying to solve this problem, and they're destroying a Canadian, well, not a cultural and a social institution doing it.
Exactly. Carrie?
Well, and I think there's a number of things at play here. I think money is playing a huge part in this. I think politics is playing a huge part in this. We know, historically speaking, that anytime you can cause disruption in the culture, especially among children and their families, you divert the attention of a large amount of the population who's too busy trying to save little Johnny and little Susie from all kinds of things, and don't have time to be engaged on political fronts. And here in Canada, being a democracy, we need people to be involved. We are the watchmen for this nation. We are the people that should be agreeing. And if what's happening in our homes as a result of the school undermining parental authority, as Ali has said, and we have all these other programs that are causing confusion, and that is under the guise to accommodate a very, very few. Now, the irony to this is, as we have seen this progress in our schools, there's a social contagion factor or a copycat factor. We know kids, especially teens, are inclined to copycat. That's why in the media, responsible media people are very careful how they talk about suicide, because we know that that will plant ideas into the minds of children. We're very careful to talk about things like anorexia, because we know once one girl, especially because teen girls are even have a higher susceptibility to this, we don't talk about this being something that is good. We try to minimize it. But with gender identity, we have kids coming in saying, oh, I want to be transitioned into the opposite sex. And we have celebrations going on in the school. We have pizza parties. We have sex activist teachers running around from classroom to classroom, jubilantly telling kids that Janie is going to go and next day become Johnny, and that this is normal. It's insane. Then we wonder why we have, for instance, a new situation called rapid onset gender dysphoria targeting teen girls. In the UK, where they've actually kept these statistics, in 2010, there were only 96 referrals to gender clinics. By 2017, we had over 2,000 references to gender clinics. This is just out of control, and it's going to be up to a lot of good people to finally come out of being nice Canadians and say, we need to stop this insanity.
Yeah, Kerry, I couldn't agree with you more. I urge Canadians to really, and not just Canadians, because we're seeing the same agenda being played out everywhere in the world, no matter where you look right now in the United States of America with their core programs. We see it coming everywhere. And I really, and for some of my life, I'm at a point going, well, guys, like, this is really, really critical. The intrusion of the government into our school system, into our children's lives is only going to get worse. You know, there's the old saying, if you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. Bill C-89 in Ontario really, really disturbed me. And I'm sure you've looked at that, Kerry, but we could talk about anywhere really right now, and we see the same thing being played out.
And I've spent a lot of time in Ontario helping the people back there to get rid of the Wynn government, which this next provincial election back there, Barry, is going to be very interesting. But, you know, I want to appeal. Your fans, the people that will be listening to this, are already being educated and informed as well of your work here. What we need to do is take that bigger. It just can't be you, Ali, myself, and a few others, because we can articulate the position well. What we've done with this issue, and I'll tell you, we are at critical mass here. The line in the sand is drawn when outsiders start coming into your classroom and start undermining, deconstructing your five-year-old. As a Canadian, at what point do we say enough is enough? Like this polite Canadian that's easy to get along with. Historically, when things were really wrong, we actually took a stand. And, you know, I'm starting to see that now. So regardless of where you are, whether it's British Columbia, Alberta, SOGI123 is coming your way like a hurricane. And you need to get out ahead of front this. We need to be talking to our neighbors. We have to start informing ourselves about propaganda. You know, I think we've dumbed down people so much that they are just so gullible. I was at a community organization recently that had concerns about SOGI, and they relied on the government website to inform. Nobody did any research behind that the government and SOGI123 was presenting. That's a sad, sad state of affairs. And I think we have to start grabbing back what we have given away. And I say we have given it away because somebody could only take your voice from you if you allowed them to. This issue is so serious, and the consequences of where we're going, and you're right, Barry, it's not just this. This is just one tentacle of a mutated octopus that has 1,000 arms reaching into our society and our culture to twist and turn this nation. And I think it's time that we chopped off a few of those tentacles.
Absolutely. Allie, did you want to make a comment?
I can't agree with you guys more on a lot of these things. The real worry is that they're attacking our institutions at just so many levels and also leaving nowhere for the future. So five-year-olds are being told they need to know, but at the same time, when those five-year-olds become, 16, 20-year-olds, the futures they have, I feel like, are going to be very different than what they expect as well. You have in Canada a culture where, you work hard to make things happen. You're kind of dealt a hand, then you work what you have. And the government is creating an environment where people can believe that you can have anything, regardless of scenario, you can have anything, and it's the government's position here to equalize that and to make that happen. And that's a little scary for me. And, Kerry, you were talking about propaganda and people being so stupid. That's also another topic that I'm extremely worried about in regards to our government, but in regards to also our media. You have this united media system that is going bankrupt. And while they're going bankrupt, their only source of revenue seems to be our federal government. While that connection exists, they seem to be very friendly to the federal government in a lot of scenarios. So that's also another area where I'm very uncomfortable, because there's propaganda potentially coming from, the main media sources that we have. And that's a little scary for me at the same time that our culture is being destroyed, at the same time that maybe our economy is being destroyed. It's just a lot of things at once.
Well, if to say that our media isn't biased, I mean, you'd really have to have your head deeply buried in the sand. present. I mean, the funding they get from the government is being paid by us taxpayers to present propaganda that, of course, is nothing but government propaganda. I don't tune into CBC. I'll listen to the reporters once in a while, but I've never heard any hardcore facts, real fact coming out of them. And you won't, because they're controlled, just like any other media organization, that are controlled by the people that are killing us.
Okay,
Go ahead. Wait a minute, guys.
Let's look at this, because we all say that, but you know what? For instance, the CBC is run by the Canadian Broadcast Act. If enough Canadians joined forces and united with one voice and one effort and said, no more propaganda, you are going to truly do what you are legislated to do and by statute required to do, and you are going to bring balanced media to this. I don't care if somebody is opposed to me, as long as my voice has equal time. And this is what we need to start looking at, the tools that we have at our disposal. One of the things, and I know that you were at the Chilliwack meeting, and I wish I had met you, Barry, but one of the things that gave birth out of that meeting is a campaign that I am now heading up as part of Culture Guard, and that's 300,000K, okay? 300K.ca. We need 300,000 Canadians of like-mindedness on just five issues, that being family right. You know, nobody's talking about the elephant in the room here. The majority of these kids that are transitioning and all the other nonsense that's going on are coming from dysfunctional families. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to say that anymore, because, oh my gosh, what if we hurt somebody's feelings? Well, let's save the kids and let the adults deal with their feelings, okay? Mm-hmm. We need to start looking at life, and I'm not talking about in the abortion context of pro-life, pro-choice. We need to look at a society that is not taking responsibility for our actions and teaching kids that the way you deal with your irresponsibility is just to kill a baby. That goes to the core of our nation. We need to be looking at judicial accountability. There is a problem within our court. We need to solve it. We need to find leadership that's willing to take them on and just not kowtow and pander to the brokers that have just puppet mastered our nation. Canada's that. We need to look at our social responsibility, and I think that's what Ali was talking about. You know, I hope I didn't call people stupid. I thought I was a little bit more diplomatic than that. I get gullible, naive, and
gotta be politically correct now. Hang on.
Willfully trusting. Okay, let's go with stupid. Okay. But, you know, we have a social responsibility. Mother government is us at the end of the day, and we are paying for this. If people understood how much money is going into so-called nonprofit organizations that are working contrary to the interest of this nation, it would upset their apple cart to the point where I hope that they would start closing their wallets. You know, I'm all for government staying out of the bedrooms of the nation, but when the bedrooms of the nation start creeping into my wallet continuously like they are, then I have a say in it. So I think we need to rise up. We need to stand up. We need to learn how to engage in this culture that tries to shut down anybody that has something worth listening to and wants to say it.
Well, yeah, Carrie, I mean, you talked I actually wasn't at the Chilliwack meeting. Yeah,
okay.
I've listened to that one and a few other of your videos a couple times now. But okay. You really got into bullying in the Chilliwack meeting, and you said a couple things that really resonated and got the crowd roaring. I'd like you to hit on that for a minute, because it got me roaring.
I'm not sure.
How much have you been bullied? How much have you been bullied in the last little bit, Carrie?
Oh, man, death threat, bully, you know, and bully from all sides. Oh, Carrie, you're too mean. You're too nice. You're too this. You're too that. I mean, I can't. This is my life, Barry. But you know what? I am so determined to bring some sanity back to this. But I think one of the poignant moments that was at that meeting was one of the transgendered man, he's also a vice president of the NDP. And you know what? I just want to be clear, and I hate that I'm always having to say this, but I love people. I love people, whatever they want to do. And I would defend anyone's right, if you're a man, to wear a wig, put on those high heels and strut your stuff. But you're still biologically a man. Don't call yourself a woman. Don't say you've got what I've got, because you ain't ever going to have that. Don't try to use the washrooms my daughters, granddaughters are going to be using, and there's privacy and safety issues. What is wrong with this world? And by the way, kudos to Anchorage, Alaska, that's voting on this on April 3rd. They've put through a proposition to keep biological reality, the reality that sets the standard in their community. What a novel concept. But
what
I know
one of the moments
that I get the most report back from the Chilliwack meeting was that Morgane Ogier, who's a transgender activist who determined to call himself, he's the biological male, he's all their children, he was married, he's only been in transition 4 years, typically by seven and eight, some majority of transition people are starting to question what they did. So he's still in the honeymoon period of his new life fantasy. But he insists everybody use the pronoun she and identify him as woman. And I told him in front of almost 500 people, you know, OJ, I got news for you. Your delusion ends where my reality begins. And, you know, we got to stop playing the name game on this thing. Like,
it's a powerful
weapon. If I have to go to jail for dealing in reality, then okay. I'm okay with that if that's where we're at. But by golly, I will not sink this nation by indulging in a delusion. I will not sink this nation by being bullied into silence. I will not sink this nation by giving up the great things that our forefathers fought for here, including freedom of speech, the right to assemble, and the right to have a brain.
Amen. Yeah, everything you're saying resonates right to my heart. I mean, I right now I'm looking at my children and my grandchildren, and I go, wow, what is coming with in this world for you? And this craziness is being implemented by a very, very small sector of our society that knows every legal angle and loophole to bring their agenda forward. We're talking about what 1.4%, I believe it is, of the population. Yeah. But they'll never talk, Carrie, about the suicide rates amongst transgenders. Unbelievable. And people, you'll never hear them talk about that. You'll never hear about what happens to these people when they actually get into this lifestyle and what actually happens to their brains. It's craziness.
Isn't that the irony to this, that we know statistically, unequivocally, kids are going to have challenges, whether they want to dress up as goth, be anorexic, be mean, all those other things. That's the teenage, you know, right sort of passage. But we know that kids, children who identify as transgender, if they are allowed to go through puberty without the wacko psychologists, the wacko pharmaceutical pushers, and just allowed to go through natural puberty, that 80 to 90% will desist or stop identifying as being transgender. Imagine right. that. So if we really care about kids, if we really love kids and it's about protecting kids, then let's get off this squawk box bandwagon that just keeps denouncing the truth and fact to this. Who wants to subject a child to going through, as one father here in Langley has done to his young teenage daughter who wants to be a boy? They were going through a terrible divorce. This guy, you know, we get information because of the employment. He paid for his daughter, his young teenage daughter, to have a mastectomy. What craziness is this?
Great. Unbelievable. I don't know what to say. Allie, you want to make a comment on this? I'm sitting back here just, I'm boiling. Did I lose you, Allie? Are you still with us?
I'm here. Hello?
Yeah, do you want to jump in and make a comment for a minute?
In general, I just feel uncomfortable. That's how I would describe myself after hearing all that. There is just like a real lack of a future is the feeling. And we keep coming back to this, that just the possibility of the future is getting more and more fearful. And, you know, you're talking about the suicide rates among one group of the population. But I think if the economy, you know, tanks, or if the current vision of the country continues as is, then it's potential that we're all going to be facing that problem at a far greater scale.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Soji and their sexual policies, I don't think that's where their hearts are. It's like what they throw up to kind of get media time, to get people angry, and to get them not listening to how much they're really screwing us, you know, through their spending, their expenses, and their other things. There's like a new poll that came, not a new poll, a new Fraser report that found that 92% of Canadians are going to be seeing a tax increase. That's a very big portion of Canadians who are seeing a tax increase. Now they're going to see that tax increase at the same exact time that the country is spending vast amounts of money, deficit spending, that businesses are being regulated, and our American neighbor is rapidly dropping their own taxes. So all this stuff's happening at the same time. And then I'm going to throw another report in this for everyone paying attention. There was a report by Scotiabank, I believe, today that also found that now investment into Canada is running out of the country in real time. So count mm-hmm. that. Our businesses mm-hmm. are regulated. Our people are heavily taxed. Our social institutions are breaking apart, as Carrie was explaining. And investment from the outside world is not coming in. That's a scary combination of things. And while that's happening, we're actually losing, I would say, our standing in the world. You had Justin Trudeau going to India, making us look truly stupid. And then coming back to Canada and then kind of trying to make it seem like it never happened. So it's like the global standing is going away.
Mm-hmm.
The social institutions are gone. The money is gone. What the fuck is left?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? It's all part of an orchestrated attack. And it's not just what we see going on in schools, but it's everywhere. But it's all designed to bring us basically to our knees. You know, I haven't studied a lot of history in my life, but I've studied it a bit. And I've looked at civilizations in the past where the family unit has been destroyed in that civilization. And what we're seeing right now, I'm going to talk about that again because it's something that I really, really I see, and I go back to my childhood and what it was like when I was a child and how connected we were with everybody around us. We knew our neighbors for three blocks. Every Sunday it was visiting a family member, or you were communicating. Every night it was conversations around the dinner table. And now that's been completely taken away from society. We see a complete breakdown in our family system. We see children being put on, massive amount of children being put on Ritalin and other psychotropic drugs at early ages that are just destroying their mind. And then we're putting all this crap into their brain to try and figure out at an age that they have no idea what you're talking about. But of course, it's coming from an authoritative figure. Go ahead.
No, you missed the point where we drug them as young as 1 year old now.
Okay.
And then we don't put all this stuff up to them. We throw it at them to just make sure that all the confusion and dysfunction that may not have come into its full realization is finalized. I for those listeners that are with us, we need to stand together. We need to unite. You need to bring 10 people on. You need to write to your friends who voted liberal the last time. Then I've got to stop, because then I go, okay, so where do we go? Is there any true leadership that's strong enough and visionary enough who has their eyes open to see what the heck is going on here? I don't think there is. I know a lot of politicians. I'm very concerned that we are leadership deficit.
Well, here's my thing. Carrie, you brought up the point of, like, a little while back that just we need a lot of people to voice themselves. And then, Carrie, you also brought up the point of communication. And I think both of those things are very important in relation to what we're discussing right now about just the state relationship breaking down with our people. On the first part, I think the government is trying to almost regulate the connections that we do have and the way that we can communicate at the time that we're accessing more and more ways to communicate. So it's very interesting to me that they're trying to say, you know, in school, you can only be taught X and Y and Z, and this is truth only, at the same time that all these kids can kind of go out and then Google and find that a lot of these things aren't true. So it's this weird duopoly where the government is trying to constrain relationships, but they're also kind of doomed to fail. And I think we kind of already see that in terms of the conservative resurgence we're seeing in Canada, not just in terms of politics, but in terms of philosophy. Right now, you have someone like Jordan Peterson, who's like Canada's number one sold author. And what does that say? But I think that really says that philosophically and like the soul of Canada right now is searching, and it's kind of looking at that kind of response and kind of digging it, right? In the face of so much chaos, in the face of so much instability and government intrusion, we're looking at a mixture of like classical Canadian culture, a firm basis for competition, and a respect for the past with a key understanding for the future as something like as like the mixture that we're kind of all moving towards. So I think we do have a political response. I think Canadians are responding. I think in terms of just having the right face, that just takes more of us organizing and being a part of the political process.
Mm-hmm. Hey, on Jordan Peterson, man, there's one gentleman there that I absolutely have a tremendous amount of respect for. I don't agree with 100% of what he says, but he is actually making changes in people's lives right now. And you'll hear the testimonials on YouTube and other areas that, you know, people are listening to what he's saying, and it's really resonating when they really reflect on what's going on and what the future for this country holds if we don't get our poop together right now and organize in groups. And that's what I try every day to bring people together. I try and bring people in media or people I meet on the internet. I'll try and hook them up with this person and, you know, try and get people really, really focused on one issue right now. And, well, we got multiple issues, but we have a government that is completely rogue, that we have a puppet sitting there that is George Soros' bum boy, and that's all he is. He's doing exactly what he's being told to do. And it doesn't matter who gets into Canadian politics. You've got the puppet on the right and the puppet on the left. We know they're going to say what they want us to hear till they get elected, and of course things change. And we could go into hundreds of different examples of that. So I think what we need in Canada is a grassroots change, total from the bottom. You know, I'm going to plug the Libertarian Party because I love their platform. I love what I really, and I'm only going to plug them for a second here, but I have looked at their platform, but more so I've looked at the people that are getting involved in the people and in this party and their prior backgrounds and who they were and the sacrifices they're already making to get involved in a platform that I really agree with a lot of their what they're saying. So I think that's really to get rid of the problem. You can't just say, hey, well, what have we had in Canada for the last how many years, hundred years? We've had two political parties with the NDP that never get elected, but we basically have a puppet on the right and a puppet on the left. Until we get rid of that paradigm, these people are all controlled by the bankers. No matter what you come, at the end of the day, they're controlled. And until we can get rid of that in our governments, our so-called leaders, we'll deal with the same problems. My thoughts? Go ahead.
You know, on the idea of bankers, Trudeau just had a very funny speech. It was like a private $1,500 a plate dinner where media were invited, but only to hear Trudeau speak. And that basically all other times were held in a private room separate from everyone, including, you know, the billionaires in the room, the massive investors. And while this is happening, his speech is that, you know, thank you all for being a part of this as we continue to tax the rich. And it's like, I wonder if you really mean what you're saying as you're in a $1,500 a plate, you know, dinner with
somebody should have scanned the audience to see the laughs. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, Kerry, I can get you in there because I want you to talk about bullying. You made one phrase there about, well, if they're so against bullying, why are they bullying me? And I remember that resonated. I mean, go ahead. Just talk about that for 1 minute for me, please. Dear. Yeah, go ahead.
That's the irony to how the social fascists work, right? It's okay for them to bully you, threaten to burn your house down, threaten to kill you, threaten to rape your children, call you all kinds of nasty names, because remember, after all, we're talking about promoting anti-bullying. But all of that's okay for that side, including their representatives in the media, because there are a lot of them. But you're not allowed to stand up and just speak the truth, tell people what you think. And if you do, if I had a dime for every time somebody said, oh, Kerry, you're so full of hate, you have hate this, hate that, and I go, could you please just give me one example? You know, just one example, and to date, nothing, right? But that's where we're in. So we have to learn how to shut people down and, you know, or ignore them and or rise above them. And, you know, I think collectively we are doing that now. The work we're doing here at Culture Guard to bring all kinds of communities together, whether it's faith communities, whether it's veterans associations, whether it's just common sense, logically thinking people, they are coming together. You know, your audience, go to 300k.ca, take the pledge, join with us. These are just pillar statements. We're not getting into all the little political nuances. These are the foundational things of what we need for Canada and people to agree on, and that they are protected, respected, and promoted in our government, right? The family unit. Most of the, there are school acts in this nation that don't have any reference to parents. You know, like, how did that happen? And I want to be encouraging here, Barry, because I have done this before. When the NDP here in BC started bringing in 1997 the anti-family, anti-democratic platform, British Columbians, you know, joined forces. I traveled around. I went up to your neck of the woods back in 98, I think. 800 people came out. Were there 800 people in Terrace in 98? Because I don't know where they all came from.
98, there would have been about 10,000 people up here, maybe.
Okay, so 10% of your population showed up.
So you're getting,
right?
You're getting 1 point. You're getting 1% of them.
Yeah.
Guys, my village in Iran when I was a child had, I think, like 40 times that population.
Well, I'm still in an isolated part of the world here, and if Carrie's been up here, she knows how beautiful it is up here, and this is where I'll die, and this is where they'll put my ashes in the ground.
But you know what? 800 people got together, and everywhere we went with our little town hall meetings, we filled arenas, we filled Legion Hall, we filled bars, we filled people's living rooms. And then
how about coming up to Terrace, Carrie?
Oh, love it!
I'll book the RM Lee Theater, and we'll fill it.
In a heartbeat. Let's do it, because
we're going to talk about that.
It's time to do this again, okay? And I've got the best news was when we finished with all this, when the election came, I knew we would probably be rid of the NDP. We nearly obliterated them. They were only left with 2 seats in our house out of being a majority of government before. 2 seats is what they were ended up with, because people got together and said enough of this nonsense. People who didn't vote came out to vote. We gave them a political playground to play in, one where they were respected, where their vote mattered, where their voice mattered, and their value, not only as a consumer, but as a citizen, was honored. We gave people who you typically held their nose and voted a place to come where they didn't have to hold their nose. And we brought a lot of people over from the NDP as well who said, don't mess with my kids, don't mess with my democracy, and don't mess with my nation. So those elements, if we can, the common sense people can just rally around and get the job done, the job will be done. We have to do that here again in BC. We have to do that across Canada. We have to do it at the federal level, but we need leaders. So those that are listening to this show, Barry, if they are leadership material, don't leave it for somebody else. If you have a strong voice, a strong vision, and you know what needs to be done, then let's get together and get this job done.
Carrie, it's beyond that. It's our responsibility to do this. We don't have a choice right now. The way I see it, there's a lot of days, guys, that I wish I'd never gone down the rabbit holes, that I was just out fishing on the riverbank, and I really, because it's overwhelming. But we're here now, and right now, never before in my life have I felt an urgency to look people in the eye and open up your heart to them and talk to them, because you love your fellow human beings. I love people. I love everybody. I don't want to see people suffer. I don't want people under the thumb of tyranny. But that is what's coming very, very quickly to all nations in the world, not just Canada, but everywhere we look. So, right now we're talking to people in Ireland and England and overseas. Well, it doesn't matter, because if you look in your parliament, you're going to see the exact same thing. If you go to Australia, if you go anywhere, you're seeing it everywhere. So it's going to take people to become educated at the implications of what's coming to their future and really take it to heart, then look themselves in the mirrors and say, look, it's time for men to stand up and be men. It really is a time that we don't have a lot of time to fool around anymore, that this is coming so hard and so fast that if we don't nip it in the bud, I don't believe the window of opportunity will be open forever. What do you think, Allie? Go ahead, Carrie. Let me make a couple comments and I'll get right back to you, okay?
Yep.
If you want to make a comment, Allie.
Actually, no. Carrie's ready. Go for it, Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie, fly.
I mean, to thing. Yeah, okay. No, we don't have a choice. When I rallied the troops back in 97 to 2001, there was still time. There was, the urgency was there. I said, you know, the door is closing here now for what is happening across Canada and as you said, the world. You know, but the good news is I look at what's happening down in Costa Rica right now. Strong, hardline family men saying enough of the UN resolutions on all this kind of nonsense involving people who can get married that shouldn't be married and all this other stuff. He is so popular in the pool because people are so hungry for leadership. If people can't look at Venezuela and see what happened when they gave themselves over to mother government, then they need to have a whack on the head and be woken up. You are right, Barry. We do not have tomorrow. It is today. Mm-hmm. It starts now.
I'm not, you know, I'm not a fear monger, guys. I'm not. I'm looking at this realistically. No. Go ahead, Allie.
I actually, there's one thing to really say out of all this. I think if you really look at it, if we really want to compete, we really want to make those like things happen, we want to survive, we need to invest in Canada, in Canadians, and make sure people here can compete going forward. You look at the UN and you look at foreign investment. And I think in both cases, you see how if anyone but yourself is defending your interest, you will lose. No one else is out here trying to defend your interest as good as you will. And I think, you know, let's talk about even foreign investment into the poor countries that UN does and that, you know, Canada does. We give billions of dollars to dictators who end up pocketing that money, who end up becoming rich, and now they get comfortable because they have billions of dollars in personal funds that they can keep accessing so long as their country remains poor. So now they keep their country poor instead of developing their country. That's one terrible scenario. There's even more terrible scenarios. Let's talk about just charity. You have all these slacktivists. You have these people who go to Africa. They take photos of themselves. They build these tiny wells. And then they come back feeling so good for themselves. But what they don't realize is that all of this aid is crippling these African countries. Instead of allowing African countries to develop their own businesses, their own community response, their own culture, their own, you know, social hierarchies that Western countries develop through peace and stability, they're giving them these free options that don't actually do anything. So again, you end up crippling these countries by trying to give them something that they didn't do themselves. And I think our solution is we understand that it's time to invest in Canadians. We start working on our own institutions. We start focusing on our own economy, on our own families. And we develop Canada to be a bastion for the future. And I think anyone who's a progressive, anyone who's a conservative, anyone who wants to see the world become better would agree with that. Because if you look for like look through the last 400 years, things got better because countries got rich and they developed technology. If Canada can keep being rich and can get richer and our people can get better, they can produce better technology that will save the world. And like that is really the future in my opinion anyways. Love to hear you guys' opinion on that rant.
Carrie?
Well, I mean, we're solving a lot of problem right here. Barry's going to run for prime minister. Allie's going to be finance minister. We're doing good, guys. No, Allie, I couldn't agree with you more. Matter of fact, I've been requested to go down to Jamaica and talk to the groups down there who say, why does Canada keep sending people our way under humanitarian reasons and screwing up our country, right? Mm-hmm. We have so much that we need to do here. And let's face it, Canada is a rich nation as far as our resources go. We have minerals, we have forestry, we have water, we have oceans, and we have a dumbed down population that doesn't know how precious of a country we have at our disposal here. Mm-hmm. I think number one, we have to start informing and educating people anew about what it is to be a nation. I think most people would be horrified to see the amount of money, the real money that goes out, because unless you're, you know, reading the Canadian Taxpayers Federation's information, the Financial Post on occasion, you don't see those numbers and where our money is going. And you are so right, Allie. It is going to buy favor with people that don't deserve to have our favor. And we have to
absolutely
commit to that. We don't need to be involved in people's population and abortion policies in Africa. We have a lot of problems here that need a lot of resolving. We don't need, you know, $10 daycare for some while others are struggling to raise healthy, happy families in their own home. We've got a lot of issues here that need to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm really worried about? There was a new poll in Ontario. Kathleen Wynne came out and just offered people everything up to, in my opinion, she would have offered a free damn pony to convince them that she was the candidate for them. And then you looked at the polls, and in the last little bit, there's been a drop in support for Ford and some people going liberal. And it seems that some Canadians are willing to accept, you know, free gifts that aren't actually free and momentarily vote liberal, even though they hate the government, they hate the party, because they want these services. Mm. And I think what that really says is that there are problems in our country where, you know, Carrie, you're completely right. There are people who are trying to have healthy families and they can't get them. And the government's current solution is free stuff, and that's not it. We need to be providing the social and economic base for these people to do that so that the government doesn't have to do it, so that we're not taking money away from people who need it right now.
Yeah, you're correct. I hope that Canadians can see through this scam, and hopefully Doug – I'm not a favor of any politician, but what Doug Ford is saying, I agree a lot with what he's saying, and hopefully he can call that out for what it is. I mean, you're right. I hope that society isn't to a point where they're gonna fall for this. But then we also got to take in consideration, Ellie, that Ontario isn't what it used to be, that it is an accumulation of multi cultures, and it's very hard to get people to vote against a government that has brought them into the country, is giving them free stuff, and continues to give them free stuff, even though they hear about all the bad. I hope it doesn't work, because she is bad. Go ahead.
Look at what's going on in Ontario. We have three pilot projects of giving people living wages for the year. You know,
yeah, like, for free.
For free. Like, yeah. I'm going, okay, who can I move in with? We got to be able to milk at least $300,000 out of this thing if the right people all got together, right? I mean, it's insidious.
And if people they can't see the onset of socialism, I mean, you got your eyes closed. Go ahead, Gil. Yeah. Alec, go ahead.
I'm actually, I'm graduating out of McGill, and a little while ago when they first announced this policy, a group of my university friends, you know, who are Ontario natives who are studying in Montreal, about, I would say within a 3-hour period, we had all messaged each other talking precisely about this, to move back to Ontario, to have 10 of us living into a house, and for us to all try to get access to this free money program. Regardless of what it took, we were willing to do just about anything to make this happen. And then I realized I still had to finish school and everything. Yeah. So,
drats, eh?
Maybe in a few years I'll give it a try. That's the goal.
Well, you know, but this is where we're at in this country. I have 4 kids. When my husband became ill and passed away and I needed to figure out how I was going to feed my 4 kids, you know, I bought a milk cow. I'm serious, you know. We grew our own chickens and turkeys and beef and that kind of stuff because I wasn't going to rely. I had the ability to take care of my family, and that's my responsibility. And I think we have lost this on so many fronts, and maybe it's the Venezuelan mentality, right? But we're going down. Why isn't there outcry that we are even going down there as far as, you know, giving this a pilot project? This is so contrary to what it is to be a Canadian, a strong Canadian that stands on their own 2 feet and doesn't expect Mother Government to take care of them.
Wow. I never thought in my life I'd see my country in the position it is right now, guys. But that being said, I applaud what you're doing, Ellie, and I applaud what Carrie's doing. And I just wish there was another 10,000 Canadians right now doing exactly what you're doing. But in the same mouthful, I do see a rise in consciousness and people becoming awake. I get into coffee shop now, and anytime I mention the name of Justin Trudeau, I can see the rage in people's faces where a couple years years ago, they were still inside the matrix. So I think we are starting to impact people, but I do feel an urgency. I really do. I've never felt an urgency in my life for people to actually get involved, to really have a good look in the mirror and say, look, there's some real, real nefarious stuff going on and it needs our attention. No, I can't think of anything right now in my life that's more important. I can't, because I see what's coming for my children. And I can literally go to a mall and see a child and think about what's coming, and it brings tears to my eyes. Well, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm trying to get my voice out here, and I hope that anybody that's listening to this will feel the same way, because it's really our responsibility, guys. That's the bottom line. We don't have a choice. Go ahead. Sorry for that rant, but that's exactly how I feel about this.
You know, that's not your rant. That's your heart, and that's the heart of so many Canadians at this point, Murray. Right? And what we have to do now is transform the heart and the words and the feelings that everybody, the majority of Canadians, are having. Because, like you, wherever I go, people are going, "What the heck is going on?" Mm-hmm. And it almost seems intuitively people know there's a problem. So hopefully, with movement like what we're doing with 300k.ca, you know, let's bring 300,000 Canadians together. That should not be difficult, that agree on freedom of speech, social responsibility, judicial accountability, family, you know, the practical cornerstones to what it is to have a healthy country.
I'll support that 100%, Carrie. I'll blast it out everywhere.
Well, let's rise up leaders to do, you know, to take it. Let's bring co-chairs onto the 300K from all different kinds of groups that all agree that this is what needs to be done. And let's take back our country from the bankers, from the pharmaceutical companies, for those that want to take and rob and destroy what is, you know, one of the greatest nations on this earth.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Ali, go ahead. We got about 4 minutes left, guys, and then
I'm just gonna take this from the very serious tone that we've had for the last 56 minutes, and bring it to a completely unserious tone. Carrie, you're saying you have a milk cow?
Not anymore. My kids are grown up. I don't have to do that anymore, Ali. That was my solution.
See, I had my first pet was actually a pet chicken in Iran. And this chicken was just one of my closest pets. And then we got a dog, and then eventually the chicken got old, and then we ate the chicken. And then we came to Canada, and I never thought I would hear a Canadian have another, similar, we had to get an animal story. But I'm glad to know that there's this connection that exists.
Yeah, it's the farmer, it's the practical farmer mentality, I think, Ali, in this. But just on this note, and I know we're running out of time, the concerning part was because we had the little bit of the hobby farm here where I could do this. All the school kids used to come here when my kids were at school. And I can remember very clearly one day after giving a demonstration on a cow is milk, one little blonde-haired girl looked up to me and she said, "Mrs. Simpson, we don't get our milk from a cow. We get it from the Safeway." And I thought, you know, but isn't that the problem that we have here in Canada? You know, I don't take care of myself. Mother government does. Mother government has become the Safeway, right, for these kids. And, you know, we have to switch this up. We have to talk about where their taxes are going. And, Barry, I would love to do another show with you on what happens when we tell kids that want to support their LGBTQ friends, you know, that they need to pledge 5% of their first paycheck to them. It actually gets them thinking, right?
And then we could do one on divisions in society, and then we could do one on distractions.
Yes. They just go on and on.
Anyway. I wish I had 4 hours to talk to you guys today. I think we could fill it right now, because I haven't touched on a lot of things I even wanted to get into talking about today. But, Carrie, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
I'm just going to finish because I know we're running out of time. Parents, wake up. Grandparents, tell your kids that your grandchildren are in danger. Exit the public schools. For years, I was always, maybe there's hope, maybe there's hope. I don't think there's hope for public education in this current climate with this current union that's governing our teachers. Take your kids out of the school. Technology gives us the opportunity to school them better than what they're going to get in the schools at this point. Good teachers are coming out of the schools. We need to employ them as from, you know, different classrooms that can beam in and help kids. Lots is going on. Join up with Culture Guard. You'll be kept informed about all these different things.
Well, Carrie, thank you very, very much for joining me today. And I'm going to be doing another show with you in the very, very near future. And Allie, I can't tell in the last minute here, Allie, tell us about what you're doing. You're putting the show somewhere else. And I'm not quite sure the name of the organization. Just plug that for a second.
And yeah, we'll do. So Barry's show is actually going to be broadcasting on the Post Millennial Network every weekend. You'll be able to find it on Facebook. We're also going to make sure that the podcast is recorded and put edited and then put onto our website. You'll be able to find that at www.thepostmillennial.com. Our podcast section should be live within the next 48 hours. So I invite everyone to come on there, read what we have, look at our videos, and join the community. 300,000 strong.
Well, thank you, Ali. I can't thank you enough for what you're doing, and any support is great support. So, that being said, I want to thank my guests. This has been a really great show. I've enjoyed this immensely. And I really want to get you guys back together here in the very near future and continue this conversation. That being said, thanks for joining me, Carrie, and thanks, Ali, for joining me. I'm going to take a 5-minute break, gentlemen and gentle ladies and children, and I'll be back in 5. Hey, welcome back to the second hour of The Big Puzzle, guys. And to say I enjoyed that conversation in the first hour would be an understatement. And I'm going to get her back on and Allie back on right away. So got me revved up. But we're going to switch gears in the second hour. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the show Dr. David Bruce Allen. I've had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Allen, I think, probably 4 or 5 times in the past year. And I never get tired of listening to the gentleman talk. I'm going to let Dr. Allen tell you a little bit about his background and what he's doing and a few of the battles he's fighting. But he is committed to really understanding the endocannabinoid signaling system in the human body, and I don't even begin to even – can't even start to begin to understand it. Welcome to the show, Dr. Allen, and how are you doing today?
Thank you, Barry. I appreciate you having me on.
Love having you.
My name is Dr. David Allen. I'm a retired heart surgeon. I'm actually double boarded. I'm boarded in general surgery, and I'm also boarded in cardiac surgery. And I had some of the best mortality morbidity in Mississippi. I used to take little old ladies who were dying on the cath lab table that the cardiologist couldn't help. And I would take them to surgery, split their chest open, put them on cardiopulmonary bypass, and harvest their leg out, the vein out of their leg, and harvest their mammary artery and bypass their heart that had blockages. And I had the best mortality morbidity in Mississippi doing that. I had a 1.4% operative mortality doing complex heart surgery on dying patients.
Wow. So, I have trouble putting on a bandage.
Well, I'm glad I don't have to do it anymore. But, yeah, it was kind of fun and exciting when it was all going on. And I had a big property in Mississippi called Blue Hole. It was a 48-acre lake estate there, real close to the city. And there was some political trouble there. They wanted to close the cardiac ICU, and I objected to that. And they started another program. And actually, it was a scam to waste employees' retirement benefits on hospital stuff. So they started a second heart program that they didn't need, and they spent all this money and ended up the CEOs left the city, and the retired people found out that all the retirement money was spent. And so there's a bunch of corruption in Mississippi, and they had a drug task force there that targeted me and came on my property. And I was actually in California living as a citizen here doing cannabis evaluations. Mm-hmm. So the hospital kind of ran me out of the city. And so instead of being a heart surgeon anymore, I started doing cannabis evaluations because I knew a lot about the ECS. And one of the reasons I knew a lot about the ECS was because of this U.S. patent, cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants.
Right.
U.S. patent 6,630,507. And in there it says that that cannabinoids protect the body from reperfusion injury. and that was my specialty, to protect the heart from reperfusion injury. In the future, doctors, heart surgeons, and other surgeons will be using cannabidiol and other cannabinoids to stop reperfusion injury in all surgeries, not just heart surgery or brain surgery, but they'll be using it in all surgeries. So I knew this a long time ago, and that's what made my interest. In addition, I had been smoking cannabis since I was 17 years old. Mm. And went through medical school with flying colors. So I had long-term experience with cannabis. I've been looking at cannabis under the microscope since 1972. So not too many people can say that. And so I've been involved in the cannabis industry, or the cannabis science, since as long as I can remember. And so when I came here to California, the Drug Task Force raided my property in Mississippi and arrested both my sister and her husband, and seized this property. It's a 48-acre lake estate. You can actually Google it on Google Earth. The address is 13013 Highway 613, Moss Point, Mississippi, 39562. And you can see this property from the Google Earth. I built a long road there called Ray Allen Road. I named it after my dad. And it's a beautiful property, and it actually, owning this property made me a target. Mm. So there's all kinds of stories I could tell you about how me and the sheriff flew over my property in the sheriff's helicopter, and there's a bunch of crazy stories. So they arrested my sister and brother-in-law on a fake raid. They found 4 grams of marijuana and 16 grams of hash. And there was a room that had some lights and some reflective stuff on the wall, but there were no plants, no water, no pots, no seed, no soil. And it was like in February, and the temperature was 35 at night. So there was nothing in this room. It was completely empty, and the police planted false evidence trying to make it look like there was an active grow there. So they took some seeds and they spread it on some of these little starter things,
right,
and acted like it was an active grow for a marijuana grow. And so they charged my sister and brother and turned them against me to testify against me. And then I turned myself in Oakland, California, at the Americans for Safe Access office on the fourth floor of the building in downtown Oakland. And I had heard that, you know, that they were at, that it was warrant after my arrest. So I turned myself in there, and the police came, and then they took me to the hospital, and then they took me to Santa Rosa prison. And I spent 2 weeks in prison there. And then they transferred me, they extradited me from Santa Rosa prison to Mississippi in this minivan. And what happened was, eventually I got put in the trunk or in the back seat, behind the rear seat of the van, in shackles. And the van was overloaded with other prisoners, and we drove from California to Mississippi, and I was in shackles in the back of the van. And went through two checkpoints through Texas, it was crazy. And so after I get to Mississippi, I actually bailed out and committed suicide by taking 30 Dalmain, 90 Xanax, and injecting my left groin with 11 blade scalpel, and or injecting my left groin with 10 cc's of lidocaine and stabbing my left femoral artery with a 11 blade scalpel. And they found me the next day. I did this on the dock of my property over the water, so I would bleed into the property, into the water, to poison the properties from anybody who would steal the property, because they were trying to steal my property from my children's inheritance. Wow. And so my sister found me the next day, and I was in a coma for 3 days. And when I got out, I got in my car and I drove back to California and I restarted my practice here. And that was out on bail. And I got some money, and me and an employee flew back to Mississippi to investigate this, the police criminal actions and stuff. Because what they did was they put a photograph of a marijuana grow that was not from my house. It was from another bus, and they gave it to WLOX. And it said pot found on Dr. Allen's property. What was clearly they were given false evidence against me in the media. And so it's a crazy story.
It
so
is.
I went back, and my sister and brother-in-law lured me into a police trap, and I got rearrested and charged with three other felonies of subornation, tampering with a witness, and bribery. And so they put me in prison 14 months pretrial. In Mississippi, if you're on bail for a felony and you commit another felony, then they put you in prison until you go to trial for both of them. So they always try to get you on that. And there was another thing, too. I was kind of the first person to defend myself on YouTube, and I made a YouTube thing about the sheriff, and I called the sheriff domestic terrorist and thugs with guns. And the sheriff saw this, actually, and he labeled me as a ape, an acute political enemy, which meant that the Drug Task Force could spend any money that they wanted to arrest me. And what they did was they sent a guy, this is when I was in practice, before I actually went to Mississippi, they sent a guy to try to entrap me for murder for hire. And it came out, actually, this came out in court documents later, that there was even an FBI investigation. So they sent a person from Mississippi to California to entrap me for murder for hire, and it didn't work. And so that's an investigation outside their jurisdiction, even. So,
right.
So these guys are like really criminals. And so anyway, I go to court finally after 14 months in prison, and I get exonerated by jury nullification, saved my miserable life. They were going to give me 35 years in prison, and so they let me out, and I went out on more bail. It was a $200,000 bail, and I had like six charges. Four of them were thrown out, and the jury, it was 11-1 and 7-5 on the two final charges. And the judge wouldn't let the split be known. My lawyer said it was probably in my favor, so I was saved by massive jury nullification. They mm-hmm. said they were going to they let me out on bail. They said they were going to retry me, and about 9 months later, they gave me my property back. So I'm one of the few humans ever to get my property back after police seizure. They had it for 3 years. And the property had been broken into and a lot of things stolen and overgrown. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. But I got my property back. And then so I actually don't have any charges. I don't have any felonies or even misdemeanors charged against me. And after that, it was really interesting. About 9 months after that, one of the police officers shot another police officer on duty. And the story was one of the guys was attacking the other guy with a needle and syringe. Nobody knows what the story was behind that. And the one officer who was actually the head of was in my house, Jackie Trussell, said to the other officer, "If you do that again, I'm going to hurt you." The other officer did it again. Jackie Trussell pulled his weapon, fired a bullet into the cement. It ricocheted and hit the guy in the ankle, and they hid the bullet fragments They hid the needle in syringe. They called somebody from the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics, who was part of the task force, came down. He's like the head guy. And they oversewed a contaminated wound and injected lidocaine in this guy's leg. And they tried, and the sheriff tried to hide all this because this is a drug task force, which is really a hunter-killer unit that hunts citizens. Mm-hmm. And they were making hella money with this drug task force, and the sheriff didn't want to impugn his business opportunity. So what he did was, he, like all criminals, they tried to hide it, and this shooting didn't come out for like 6 weeks. And then it finally came out, and then the firestorm happened. And one day there was a story about the sheriff's helicopter, and so I wrote in as a comment on this news story that the sheriff had picked me up one time after I met him at the barbershop when I was a heart surgeon, and asked me if I wanted to go fly around and look for marijuana fields. So I went. I said, hell yeah. So I went with him. We went to Trent Lott Airport, went in the police helicopter. We flew directly from there to my blue hole, and hovered over. I have a metal building there, and I was doing billing out. It was my billing office, and my sister and the billing manager came out and waved at us in that police helicopter, and we flew off. And so anyway, I mentioned this crazy story, and what happened was the neighboring newspaper in the next city over hated the sheriff, and they started investigating. And so the sheriff had like 750 vehicles and 250 employees. And he was like a little Noriega, and so he had two working helicopters and another helicopter for part, and he had like half tracks and boats and four wheelers and all kinds of shit because he was making money with this drug task force. And so the neighboring newspaper put this story on what they started investigating the sheriff. So they asked him, how much money are you making? How many helicopters you got? Who pays for the gas? And the sheriff said, this is none of your business. We run off of non-governmental funds. This is money that we get from
corruption
people. Corruption. And the truth was, there were lots of stories about this sheriff going to people's houses that were having football parties and arresting all the black people in the football at the party for gambling. This happened over and over a time again, you know. So this sheriff was like using the drug task force to intimidate other businesses and stuff. So what happened was, the newspaper got all the other sheriffs in the neighborhood to divulge what their eyes and nose were, but they wouldn't, but this sheriff wouldn't. And so there started to be a big investigation. The sheriff had 31 felony charges and from a bunch of crazy stuff, and ended up having to resign. The drug task force metastasized to a different city under a different name. So my case was responsible for breaking up a drug task force and having a sheriff resign, a sheriff, and he had to wear an ankle monitor for like 9 months.
Yeah, I actually read articles on that. Actually read articles on that, sheriff, at other sites.
Right. My lawyer sued him for like $551 million. And someone got to him, and he didn't file any of the paperwork in a timely manner, and so they dismissed the case. And so it's like total corruption down there.
Right, top to bottom.
Like and so then, after I got released, the drug task force immediately called the medical board here in California and told them I was released. And within 30 days of me being released from prison after being in prison for 14 months, the medical board restarted an investigation on me. They claimed that I didn't do a good faith exam, whatever that is. There's no known definition for that. And they claim I was doing an inadequate exam on patients. And I proved in court, I had to defend myself pro se because I couldn't afford a lawyer. And I proved in court that I had a 1.4% operative mortality, taking dying people to the operating room, and that my decision process was good enough to have that kind of a mortality and morbidity. And they said that my decision process for selecting who couldn't use cannabis was not adequate, and they took my license.
Wow. You know, when you talk...
I live in poverty now, which is great, because I can... I live on Social Security, and I don't have to deal with any of this shit.
Go ahead, Rod. See, did you want to say something?
No, I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything.
Okay. Listen, Dr. Allen, you were talking there a little while ago, and this is something that I didn't know about your past, that you'd actually tried to commit suicide. You know, when I hear that, and it just it gets me right to the heart when a man like you is out trying to do nothing but good for people, is drove to that point. And,
well,
you know,
I knew the
corruption, yeah, but listen, you know, buddy, yeah. It that drives me crazy when I hear this stuff, but you're not alone. I mean, I know the attacks that many people that are doing exactly what you're doing are ramping up, and, to see them shut you down like this and put you in this kind of situation.
I still haven't talked about
it. Just kills me.
Go ahead. I haven't seen my two boys in 10 years now.
What do you say to that?
And this is my brother. His two sons work in a police state job, and they're all like super anti-marijuana. Not like a little anti-marijuana. They're like super anti-marijuana. And my family has disowned me. I've saved thousands of people's lives, of sheriff's wives, of dignitaries in the community, of people living under the bridge that couldn't afford heart surgery. I did heart surgery on an emergency basis on them.
Mm-hmm. And this is the thanks you get from society or from the powers to be, eh, Doc?
Right.
I mean, what a society we live in when this kind of crap is going on, when, you know, we could be focusing our attention on this plant way more than we are. And I'm seeing a real shift in society now, Doc, as far as people becoming aware of not just the medical benefits of it, but the industrial use of the plant. And to me, that's just as important as the medical, but they're two arm in arm. But to me, I'm looking at some of the things that I'm getting involved in now, and that, you know, these hemp-based building products, and starting to promote it up north here. And I've actually got two people in my community now, one in Kitimat and one just out of Terrace here, that are going to be constructing houses in hemp products this year. So we see a shift coming. Yeah. I talked to you about that before, Doc. I'm involved, and people want to have a look at this stuff, and I'm promoting it a lot. I'm right now in negotiation with the company exactly how we're going to do this up here as a sales representative, because that's where I want to go, Doc. I want to bring this to the public's attention, the benefits of the incredible benefits, not just one benefit, but multiple benefits of building with hemp and what it can do to our environment, Doc, and to our planet.
Well, they're not teaching really this in medical school either, though.
No, what did you tell me that once? You said that only 13% of the universities even touch on the endocannabinoid signaling system, correct? I think you said that to me in one of our talks.
Yes.
I don't know if that number's gone up.
I did a study called Ignorance is Not Bliss. It's on Cannabis Digest. I have a bunch of articles from Cannabis Digest you could look up.
Okay.
And we did was we called 157 medical schools. We asked the director of the curriculum if they had a department with a director of the endocannabinoid signaling system, or if they had any courses in any ancillary, if they had any directed courses, or even any, if they mentioned it in any ancillary courses like pathophysiology, neuroanatomy, or pharmacology. And the answer was only 13% even mention it. Nobody has organized courses. And
what a shame.
I proved that they're not teaching this in medical school. I did this study. I paid for this study myself when I was, before my office was closed. And so my first day of residency, my chief resident told me a lifelong lesson. He said, the pioneers get the arrows.
that's it. True. What else do you need to say about that?
They also said,
a true statement.
Right, they also said, if we want to know your opinion, we'll ask you for it.
Like, shut up, go along with the program, or get out of here. You know, to me, Doc, you know, I've changed my diet, and I've been, like I mentioned just before we got on the air, and I'm going to plug it just for a minute, because I got to talk from the heart about this one. Is Chaga has made incredible difference in my life. And I urge people, if they can get their hands on Chaga, especially there's Chaga is there's three countries or three areas in the world that produce phenomenal Chaga, and Siberia is number one, and Northern Ontario, believe it or not, is number two, and then Northern British Columbia, us guys right up here, we're number three. But I'm lucky enough to get my hands on it. I've been using it for coming up 4 years now, and honestly, I was suffering from arthritis in my body, and it's all gone away. I used to stand and move my body side to side, and you could hear my knees click across the room. Well, that's gone away now, Doc. So I don't know if it's the Chaga, but I'm gonna mention one other thing too, Doc. You know, about 2 years ago, and it's been almost 2 years solid now that I've been able. I was for a while taking oil when Rick Simpson, when I was doing that tour with Rick, I was able to get my hands on oil for quite a while. But for 2 years solid now, I've been able to put about a third of a gram of oil in my body every day. Of course, I don't get any effect from the THC because my body's acclimated to that effect a long, long time ago. But what I have noticed, and I want you to hit on this because you talked about it once before when we had a conversation, how cannabinoids open up signaling system in your brain, or I don't know how to describe it, but what I will say, and I'm being honest about this, Doc, is that I see my brain now seems to articulate information a lot better, that when I'm having conversations, I can get inside there and pull out information that I couldn't pull out before. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but I actually feel like my brain is working way better now than it was a couple of years ago. And not to say I'm a smart guy, but I'm just saying that's what I'm seeing. So why is that? Well, but it's the truth. It's the truth. Anyways, go ahead.
It's hard to say because there's a lot of factors. Is it a Chaga? Is it the cannabinoids?
It's the combination of the two I'm taking right now.
But, you know, the science of the ECS was a illegal science. It was a hidden science. If you were a scientist in the United States and applied to try to work with this compound, THC, in any manner, it was like it was worse than handling radionuclide material. So they had more restrictions on if you had cannabis in your facility than they would if you had radioisotopes. And so this was an illegal science, but there's another illegal science that's being hidden as well. And this is starting to come out, and it's about the science about mycelia, mushrooms. And mushrooms are kind of like a different organism altogether. They're not like animals and plants. They're kind of like they're from outer space. And there's some evidence that may indeed point to the fact that these are that spores are so light that they can escape gravity and can actually travel in the space and successfully inhabit undeveloped, you know, rocky planets, dissolve the rock into, you know, the components and start plant life. And what's really weird about the mycelia is this. Every plant and animal cell has one nucleus per cell, okay? And the nucleus job is to make proteins. It has the DNA, and you read the DNA, and the DNA actually gets transferred into a code that turns into proteins. So the only job that the nucleus has is to, depending on where the DNA is read, is to make a different protein. So in animals and plants, it's one nucleus per cell. But that's not the case with mycelia. They have multiple nuclei per cell, and even more surprising, they can stream these nuclei down between cells in the little tubes. And you can see on TV, there's microscopic shots of these nuclei going down these tubes like nerve transmission. Okay? And what happens is the mycelia go out into the soil, and they're surrounded by bacteria and viruses. And they stream these nuclei down the little tube, and what happens is these nuclei is producing a little different protein depending on where the DNA is read. And what happens is one of the nuclei get lucky and produce a protein that's toxic to the bacteria in that area. And what happens is the bacteria all die, and the mycelia capture new ground and capture new food. And then they transfer that information on how to make that new protein to all the rest of the colony. So that's why all our antibiotics are come from mycelia. They're like, and the mycelia network is kind of just like the brain's network. And so the question, do actually mycelia have consciousness?
That's deep, Doc. That's deep, too deep for my little brain. Excuse me.
Well, I know for a fact that mycelia respond to gravity and light. So that means that it must have some kind of sensor that can sense gravity, because you can grow a mushroom in a configuration where if it grows out on the bottom of the substrate, it
right.
will grow and it will turn around, and the mushroom head will be facing the earth just like it normally would. So it has a way of sensing gravity.
Right. Again, we were talking before the show started there, Doc, and I got into harvesting mushrooms in northern BC here about 30 years ago, but the University of British Columbia just finally had a study done last year about some of the medical properties in mushrooms, especially a couple of them in particular is the King Belita and the lobster mushroom. And some of the reports that come out, you know, this has never been made public, but incredible medical benefits to the human body is all I'll say. So I'm just starting to get educated on the medical benefits of it, but I know a chag. I've listened to and studied quite a bit about chag and how it works. And it's just a miracle. It really is. I've seen it, and I can't say this. I just want to make one statement, Doc, before I let you in, is that I just want to make one statement about chag. I can't say that it will knock cancer out of your body. But I got into making chaga and selling a little business here in Terrace. I got a website called Canada Chaga. I've been rendering chaga down and what they call a low heat extraction. I've been sharing it in the public. And I've had 8 people now come to me and tell me that their cancer counts are down to nothing simply by adding chaga to their body. And this is coming right from people's
low temperature extraction. Tell me about that.
Yeah, what I do, I had the pleasure of meeting a gentleman by the name of David Wolf. David Wolf, if you look him up on the internet, Doc, he's kind of the guru of mushrooms in British Columbia. And I actually interviewed him on a radio show about 3 years ago when I first got into chaga. But he actually went through what, and it's on the internet, you can actually look it up yourself, is what they call a low heat extraction, where I'm simmering my chaga at about 150 degrees for about 18 hours. I break it into small chunks, and then I flash freeze those chunks for about an hour, and then I simmer them again for about 14 to 16 hours. So I'm simmering for about 32 hours with an hour flash freeze. And what the flash freeze does, it'll open up spores in the chaga that your heat isn't opening up. So it shocks the block and it opens up all the spores. I'm getting about 85% of the nutrients in my chaga. And I've had my products tested. I'm sharing it in the public, Doc. And like I said, I can go to jail in Canada for saying to somebody, hey, drink this. It'll knock chaga, not cancer out of your body. But I can give you this lady, but I can give you this lady's phone number and this lady's phone number and this gentleman's phone number and this gentleman's phone number. You can get on the phone and talk to them and see what chaga did to them. And that's how, of course, I have to approach it because of the restrictions in our society. But it is having an amazing effect on people, Doc. It is. So, I say, hey, thank God for it. That's all I can say. He put it on this planet just like everything that's good for our body is put on this planet. I have never felt more true about that statement, Doc, because everything, it seems, that I get back to natural. You change your diet. You get all fine foods out of your diet. You try and eat foods that are non-GMO. You grow your own vegetables, so you're getting the phytochemicals that you're supposed to get, and your whole body starts to turn around. And, of course, the better it feels, the more you want to do it. So it's contagious. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. I gotta send you down some chaga. I'm gonna send you down some chaga.
I would love for you to do that. You know, chaga is just one type of mycelia. There are 10 times more mycelia types than there are plants and animals combined.
Isn't that an amazing stat?
That's amazing. And chaga is just one.
I know. What about the rest of them? Holy smokes. Yeah. If we start exploring all of those and studying them, Doc, I mean, I think you'd turn Big Pharma upside down, period.
Right. Well, yeah. That's the fear. That's the fear of these people. You know, we live in a topsy-turvy world where, like, there's no police accountability, a deliberate police accountability, and they're attacking people and just all kinds of, you know, it's like they don't make decisions that makes good sense for the society.
Of course. That goes without saying.
It's like Idiocracy, the movie.
You know, that's a conversation.
So I live in Sacramento. I'm sorry. I live in Sacramento, and there's this big issue with the police shooting a young black man 20 times. They shot at him, hit him 8 times, and they're protesting. And there's really nobody that's actually saying what they could do to actually make better, things better. So while I'm on your show, I would like to promote Dr. Allen's view of what they should do to fix the police state. So the first thing would be, stop the ability for the police to turn off video and audio recordings. That'd be the first thing. The second thing would be force police to have mandatory personal gun insurance for carrying a deadly weapon. Now, as a heart surgeon, I used to have insurance that cost me $1,200 to $1,500 a day to operate on humans. If I didn't have the insurance, I couldn't get privileges at the hospital. So nobody that works at the hospital, everybody that works at the hospital has to have insurance to protect the hospital, of course. And so I had to pay a large amount of my income just to operate on human beings. But police don't have that thing. And if they had an insurance, if they were forced to have an insurance, what would happen would be this. Currently, if a police goes to court, now the courts have to have police testify on a daily basis. They testify for the courts to convict a lot of people for a lot of different things. So the courts kind of work hand in hand with the police. And for anybody to think that the police would not, or that the courts would not show favoritism to the police in a court proceeding, it's not human nature. It's against human nature for that not to be shown favoritism to the police. Okay.
Correct.
So in the courts, the police always get the favoritism. If you had a third party, an insured person, then the insurance agent would have a monetary dog in the fight. And so they wouldn't want officers that they would have to insure to continually cause them issues that they would have to defend in court. So the insurance company would have a monetary interest in finding the truth, whereas the courts may not.
Wow. Okay? What a great idea. Go ahead.
The third thing would be if more than one bullet is shot on an unarmed citizen, then the that case automatically go to the grand jury. And so those four little suggestions right there would immediately stop the police state. They would now there would be a lot of arguments against these suggestions. All of them would be completely baseless, except for, you know, the police. They don't want to pay more money out of it. They would say, "Oh, well, we need more money to do this. We wouldn't want to pay it out of our salaries." And I say there's a lot of businesses that you have to have. And, oh, the last thing, I forgot this. Do you know the police do not have a national licensing thing? There's not a licensed entity for police. All heart surgeons, all doctors, all nurses, all beauticians, all engineers have to have license and boards. And, you know, and actually, well, I think that a national licensing agency for police that would regulate, you know, because I guess police training is not the same all over the country. It's regional, with different police getting different training, and that would put a rein on some of this, I believe.
I think those are all really, really good ideas, Doc. And when you get a minute, when the show's over, if you don't mind posting those four ideas to my Facebook or somewhere I can go back to them, I'd like to share those ideas with some people, because a few things you spoke about there would really, like I said, bring a halt to it, especially if they're, like you said, a third person involved that's an insurance agency. And these police agents, you know, they were actually held accountable financially. I think, that alone is a great idea. So if you can do that after the show, I appreciate it.
Sure.
There needs to be accountability.
There needs to be a national practitioners data bank. So if the police – so doctors have a national practitioners data bank. So if you're in Florida, say, and you're a doctor and you do something bad, you can't go to Connecticut and do the same thing.
Right.
And so if they had a national practitioners data bank for police, that would solve a lot of these issues as well.
Right. Well – there are definitely some serious issues with the police, that's for sure. But, getting back to cannabis, Doc, when I get talking about that, and really when I look, one of the things that I really seem to be paying a lot of my attention to now is the state of our planet and the state of our whole world in general. And when I think about cannabis and I look at all the properties and the values, I just hope that we can embrace it fully, because I really believe, like Rick Simpson said this to me once, Doc, and it resonated with me, and it sounded corny at the time, but he said to me one time, he says, the hemp plant could heal the planet from the inside out. And we see our planet in peril right now. And I think if we embrace it fully through our industrial use and our medical, our bodies are so sick now. We look at what's going on with the health of the United States and Canada. We are the sickest nations in the world, and we just seem to be getting sicker and sicker all the time. And there's multiple reasons why that's happening. We don't have time to discuss that today, but all I'm trying to say is that, this planet has been on this planet for thousands and thousands of years, and we used it for thousands and thousands of years, and it was demonized and taken away from us. And I see now the public really starting to get educated on that issue in particular, and we're starting to embrace it worldwide. And I'm going to get involved with this company, because building buildings out of hemp, Doc, we can build buildings that don't burn, that'll last 500 years or five times as strong as wood, will never create black mold or white mold, blah, 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 blah. It's just the list is endless. And now we can build for the same price as normal building materials. So you're going to see a change. You're going to see it come. And that's, I'm going to focus a lot of my attention on that, because I do pay attention to what's going on to the planet. So, but anyways,
right. This fiber is so useful in so many different things. And this war against this plant has cost humanity a tremendous amount. And
lives. Lives.
And a lot of people are due war reparations for this.
Actually, Doc, I'm at a point where I honestly feel that, doctors, and I know you're a doctor, but should be fully held accountable for the fact that the information about this is out there, that they still refuse. Not you. I'm talking about general practitioners, because I know they're mandated
to go down along the lines. By law.
They can't. I know that, Doc. I know that.
It's the law's fault. Yeah.
So the law has to be changed. And when people realize that, and there's still enough of us, there's still more of us than them, Doc, I really feel it all comes down to educating people. And that's why getting you on and getting other people that are involved is just something that I'm kind of focusing a lot of my attention on, because it has so many answers to so many problems we see coming. So, to me, it's 50,000 uses of the hemp plant. Everything we're looking at around us can be replaced with hemp, and it can be done in a way that isn't going to damage our planet. And what have we done in the last 100 years, Doc? Really just start of the Industrial Revolution, along came plastics, along came oil, along came the nuclear power industry. And what do we see now? A planet that's dying. Well, I don't believe it's too late, but boy, this plant can go so long and so far into solving
it's
a lot.
It's almost too late.
I don't want to say that, Doc. I don't want to say that. I don't want to – honestly, Doc, I don't want to say that. But honestly, deep down inside of me, I'd almost have to agree with you. And I base that on what I see going on in the planet. But I still feel I have to be positive. We're not here to say it's all over. But I wouldn't be able to say honestly that if we didn't do something in the next 10 years, it is over. Okay? Period.
Well, you know what freaks me out is that there's an ocean of plastic twice the size of Texas floating off the coast of California. I believe that the people that make this plastic should be forced to harvest everything that's floating in the ocean, and turn it into rook pavement.
Absolutely.
If we had a just society, that they would force these people to sell these plastic cups and plastic bags and all this other shit. That,
I know.
If everything costs
lunacy.
A million times more.
I know, Doc. I know. But we could say that about just about every sector of any kind of government agency. You could talk about the nuclear regulatory industry. We could talk about every sector of government. They're not there for us, buddy. They're not. I mean, they're controlled by the corporations. No. Every government agency is just a puppet head. Justin Trudeau is George Soros' bum boy. You know, we see this going on all around the world. China, plastic, buddy, you know, and I know, Doc, now that there's a hemp-based plastic coming out with a five-month shelf life. And I could send you the reports on that. It's coming out in Germany. 5 months, it turns into the earth again, Doc. Isn't that a great idea? So you take it to the store, ship, it's used, they take it home, they put their garbage in it, they take it to the landfill. In 5 months, it's gone. Not 10,000 years from now. Man, come on, wake up, guys.
These people don't understand that these companies that are selling soda bottles and all that other shit, even plastic water bottle stuff, that those are really our enemies.
I don't buy them.
Those people are our enemies.
Yeah, period. I just don't buy them, Doc. Because I understand that, that sounds corny. But, if everybody started putting that same practice into place, all of a sudden they'd see a drop. And people would go, hey, we're not going to buy your product. Let's go back to glass. Well, there's a good idea, because glass is easy to recycle. And people would have to pay for it. And there you change people's thinking again. But go ahead.
The problem with even glass recycling is they don't take the glass and recycle clean the bottles and recycle them. What they do is they crush everything and then make new bottles.
Yeah, it's so a better system than what's going on right
the
now.
Old, the old system, they used to actually clean the bottles, but I guess they don't do that shit anymore.
Well, we've got to get away from anything that's made out of oil-based products. It's all coming out now that everything we need can be made out of hemp-based products. I mean, it's in front of us, and it's really, really, I think it's our responsibility to pay attention to it, Doc. I mean, this Just Biofiber company, they're really, really starting to gain momentum. And I got people now that are really, I mean, big-time builders up here. Sat and had conversations with them, and I throw five simple facts at them. And you can see their eyeballs just rolling their head like, what the fuck are you, excuse my language, I don't swear, what the hell are you talking about? And then I get to explain it for a few minutes. And then I send them to the site, and they come back the next day, and they go, holy Uggsfay, Batman. And you can do this for the same price now as normal building. It's a no-brainer, guys. It's just educating the public, Doc. And we got to get on board. Got to do that. Just got to get this information out. So, listen, we're down to the last. I think we've got 4 minutes left here, Doc. I'd like to give you a couple of minutes to speak at the end here, and then our hour is gone. It goes pretty quick when I get talking with you, bud. Thanks.
All right. Well, I think that the discovery of the endocannabinoid signaling system is the most significant discovery in human history and will save more lives than the discovery and application of sterile surgical technique. And so what that means is more people will be saved by manipulation of the ECS than are currently saved by sterile surgical procedures.
I believe there was a world-renowned medical publication that made that exact same statement, Doc, because I know I read it once, and I can't pull it off the top of my head.
They got it from me.
Well, I believe that. Well, I believe it, Doc. So, with that being said, thanks for joining me again today. It's always a pleasure having you on, and your wealth of knowledge when it comes to this incredible plant and this incredible medicine. It boggles my mind, Doc. Every time you get on, I learn something new. So thanks for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you for having me, Barry.
Thanks again. That being said, guys. Yeah, listen, Doc, I will. You post your mailing address in my Facebook or some other way you want to get it to me in my Skype or something, and I will send you down some chunks, and I will go through the process with you how to extract the nutrients, okay?
All right, you're the man. Thank you much.
Thanks, Doc. Hey, guys. Hey, well, you know what? Today's been kind of full spectrum show. We kind of went down some rabbit holes in Canadian politics. During the course of the show, we said, and I'll say it again, that what we're seeing happening in Canada is just a mirror image of what we see going all over this world right now. So I'm glad we could switch gears in the second half and talk about something that inspires me and brings hope to my heart. Thanks for joining me, guys. It's been a great show, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place. God bless you all, and have a great week, and bye for now.